And we basically did like backwards evolution and looked backwards to the least common ancestor with, there's a bad coronavirus, which is the least common ancestor. And we found what this ancestor was. So we went back in the tree and we were able to pinpoint what our ancestor looked like.
You're listening to What the Tech, a podcast powered by the Computer Science Department of UCalgary, here to deconstruct complex computer science topics bit by bit and explain what the tech is going on.
In this week's episode, we speak with Erin, a recent bioinformatics grad at UCalgary. Erin explains her work with COVID-19 data and how bioinformatics and computer science intersect.
Hey there, What the Tech listeners. Welcome back to our show. It's Chris and Kelsey here, and tonight we're talking to Erin. She's a recent graduate of the University of Calgary. She just graduated from the Honors of Bachelor of Health Science program in bioinformatics with a mathematics minor. She's also the class valedictorian. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, how was grad, Erin?
Grad was super, super fun. It was very different being online, but the Bachelor of Health Science program is really, really small. So we got the chance to kind of have a fun little Zoom grad where we moved across the screen. They like had like our picture come across, we got a degree, and then it went the rest of the way. So that was kind of fun. And then specifically in bioinformatics, and we'll get into that more later, what the whole world of bioinformatics is. There was only 5 graduating bioinformatics students from my class. And so we got together in our backyard and had a little celebration. And that was quite fun too.
Nice. That's so dope. And you're your class's valedictorian. Did you give like a virtual speech then with your little icon moving across the screen there?
Yeah. So as class valedictorian, I had a little 10-minute speech where I talked to like the whole class of health science. So that was less focused on bioinformatics and kind of the program as a whole. And I was also the first bioinformatics major to ever be valedictorian. So that's pretty cool.
Really cool. So yeah, if you just want to give us a little explanation of what bioinformatics really is.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
So when I like to talk about bioinformatics, I like to think of it as the triangle of mathematics, computer science, with like quite a focus on computer science, and then health science. Some will say that third point of the triangle can just be biology in general, but most people who do kind of bioinformatics research tend to focus on the health science side. And so bioinformatics as a field is quite a new field in general. It kind of started in 2001. It's kind of like the beginning of the bioinformatics field, although there were some statisticians working on similar problems before 2001. But 2001 was when this huge project called the Human Genome Project came out. And basically, the Human Genome Project was a project that was mostly funded by the National Center for Biotechnology Information in the United States. And it was the first full sequencing of the human genome. It took 3 years. I can't quite remember how much it cost, but it was like in the millions of dollars. And they were able to fully sequence the full human genome. And what came out of the sequence of the full human genome, because it was mostly government funded, was that all of our information related to kind of genomes and genetics in general is all open source, which is really, really quite cool about the bioinformatics field. All of the technology related to bioinformatics is also open source. And because of this open source nature, people started to grow and they're like, okay, so now we have this sequence. And for those listeners who don't know, the whole human genome is the accumulation of every single little bit of genetic information in the human. And so we have all this information now, what can we do with it? And that's kind of where bioinformatics came, because it was no longer a human problem. You have like trillions of base pairs in length. We have to turn to the computers. We need to turn to machine learning algorithms, and the field just kind of grew from there. And I want to say the biggest kind of last couple of years in bioinformatics that have really appeared has been, first of all, they just finished the first what's called telomere to telomere human genome. And so what that means is there's sections of the human genome that we could never sequence before, because it was repetitive regions that our sequencing technology couldn't go through. And so in the last couple of years, there's been this huge advancement in a domain called third generation sequencing, and these can do much longer reads. So our genetic algorithms can figure out what that whole from one side of the human genome to the other was. So really, really new advancements. And then the other really big exciting thing kind of has to do with the COVID-19 pandemic in bioinformatics. Bioinformatics, because of the pandemic and the amount of data that we've collected, for perspective, we're getting 100,000 COVID-19 genome sequence per day putting on our database right now. So it started out quite low, but like every day we're getting 100,000 new sequences. And so again, it's become this huge data crunching problem. What can we draw from this data? And as a result, bioinformatics has made its appearance and people are more interested in it now.
That sounds super interesting. And you've been mentioning now about COVID-19 and how this is kind of a new up-and-coming thing that's part of the bioinformatics world. And I know you did do a little bit of research with COVID-19. Did you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess I kind of want to get into the story of how I got into this research, and then I'll get into what the research exactly was, because the story is kind of cool. In February 2020, or early February 2020, we were assigned a class project in the first bioinformatics course I'd ever taken. So before then, we took a lot of computer science and a lot of biology. And this is like the first time we actually got to complete the triangle. And so we're in this class, and this professor, who I got to know really, really well through my 4 years, his favorite assignment is like, take a piece of data and just do an analysis for it. So whatever we've learned in class, find some data and go with it. And he kind of puts in the caveat that nobody can analyze the same thing. And so I went into this class, and I had some suggestions from me, like that this like COVID word had started to appear. And it was because it was like late January still of 2020, and like it hadn't really become a thing yet. I turned to the person I was supposed to work on this project with, and I was like, hey, do we want to research this? And he was kind of like, I'm not really sure. This isn't really that big, because he had already had like, I think he had 7 publications or something. And so then he came back to me, and I was like, hey, it's growing a little. And so finally he was like, okay, sure, let's do this. So we went up to our professor and we were like, we want to research this like emerging topic. And he was like, okay, cool, go for it. And then we went into lockdown 2 weeks later. The two of us started working on this, working primarily on something called phylogenetics. So phylogenetics is the branch of bioinformatics that looks at how things evolve over time. And so specifically, like, how do we get our ancestors, so the ones that we can see right now, and how can we derive backwards and see where different viruses in this case, or organisms in general, come from. And there's a whole bunch of algorithms that do this. So what we did was we went through this project, and we came up with a family tree of the coronavirus genomes that were already out there, and did this other thing looking at binding dynamics between a receptor called the ACE2 receptor, which is inside the human body, and it's in your lungs, it's in your intestines, and the spike protein on COVID-19. So this protein is what binds to our ACE2 receptors, and it's how COVID-19 is able to enter our cells. And so we looked a little bit at this binding and looked at some kind of different ancestors and came up with this project. And the two of us were really excited. This was like our first like real research project, even though it was just for a class. And we turned to a professor and we were like, hey, we think we have something here. Can we take it further? And he was like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like, let's go at this. So this was last spring 2020. And we kind of sat down with him, and he was like, okay, so this is what you've done so far. Here's what I'm thinking. And so what we ended up doing was another procedural element called molecular dynamics. And we looked at this spike ACE2 receptor binding domain. And we took our spike protein, specifically the part of the spike protein that binds to our ACE2 receptor. And we basically did like backwards evolution and looked backwards to the least common ancestor with, there's a bat coronavirus, which is the least common ancestor. And we found what this ancestor was. So we went back in the tree and we were able to pinpoint what our ancestor looked like. And so that gave us a sequence which had 4 genetic changes from the spike protein as it stands. And we took those four genetic changes and we basically artificially mutated them and changed them on our computer. And then we ran it in basically a computer simulated cell is the best way I can describe molecular dynamics. We looked at the energy changes in this computer generated cell to see if to see how the protein would change. And what we discovered was completely out there. We were expecting to be like, oh, look, we found the amino acid change that allowed it to bind to our lungs. And we were wrong. instead, we found that our little ancestor we created could bind to the receptors better, like much, like significantly better than our current one. And we were like, oh, maybe it's just like an artifact of simulation. And then we talked to some other researchers and they found the same thing, like in a petri dish. So that was really, really cool. We're still working on getting that paper published, but that was kind of where the COVID research went from there.
Super cool, super cool. So just for our listeners that may not understand a little bit of the scientific terminology that you were getting at there, I know people hear a lot right now, a big thing is the variants and, you know, how they kind of adapt to the vaccines and, you know, all these different words that are thrown around here. When you mentioned the ancestor, what exactly does that mean and how does that happen?
Yeah. So in terms of the ancestor, what we're talking about there is like when we look at evolution along a tree, we can really think of it like as a tree actually branching out. So when you look at a tree is like in a triangle, like in real life. And what an ancestor would be those like where your slingshot would be if you were to look at a branch and there's the little point in there. And so that's what we're talking about, the ancestor. But the problem is we have to imagine this tree as if you could only see the tips of the branches. So all we get to see as scientists are the leaves. And we have to figure out, okay, what does what does our slingshot look like? And that's what we do computationally, and we do with a lot of mathematical algorithms and that kind of stuff. So that's what our ancestor is. Our ancestor is the slingshot point, but all we get is the leaves.
So basically, an ancestor, I guess, would be the origin of like this virus or disease, like a kind of, I guess, its ancestor, where it originated from.
Yeah, absolutely. If we go back to kind of looking at this origin story, and I'm also going to refer to our leaves. So our origin that we're looking at is back in history. So we can't actually look at that origin per se. It's like, it's a historic thing. We dated it to 2013. Others have dated it much earlier than that. And so we don't have that data to play with. All we have is these leaves that we can look at. And so specifically, we were looking at the leaf of COVID-19, but also the leaf of another coronavirus. So COVID-19 sits inside this big, huge family of coronaviruses called RATG13, which comes from bats. And it's the origin of this RATG13 and our COVID-19 virus.
That makes sense.
Interesting. And you mentioned that you're using a lot of computational methods and different algorithms to look at these molecules and, you know, figure it all out. Are there any specific well-known algorithms or computer programs that you used for this?
Yeah. So I guess there's kind of three big ones. The first one I'm going to talk about specifically, like we didn't use it a ton in this project, but it was kind of like it's there all the time. Is both BLAST and MAF. So BLAST stands for Basic Local Alignment Search Tool. And you could use BLAST on anything. BLAST basically takes two strings. So for our very computer science-y listeners, we have our two strings and it makes it so that the strings line up with each other. If we had two words like wood and wolf, it would make sure that the W's were together and the O's were together. And so BLAST will take these two and it makes it so that we are looking at the same data, because it would be really unfortunate if we were looking at a sequence and the sequence was shifted over. So we, again, our genetic information we refer to as sequences. And so what the BLAST does is it makes it so that it's all aligned with each other and all our A's. So our A's, C's, G's, and T's, which is what the genetic code is made of, all line up with each other. BLAST does it one-to-one, so we can only look at two sequences at a time when we align them, whereas we have another algorithm called MAFT, and unfortunately, I don't know what that stands for.
Hi, listeners. For those interested, MAFFT, or M-A-F-F-T, stands for Multiple Alignment Using Fast Fourier Transform, and is used specifically to align sequences of amino acids and nucleotides.
But it does the same thing with a series of sequences. And so we feed it in one, and then it'll align one to one, and then it'll align two to three, and then it'll go back, and it will make sure that they're all aligned correctly. And so we have to do this whole MAFFT alignment before we can even start to build our tree, looking at our origins and our ancestors, so that we're looking at the correct data. When we want to look at this tree and go back and derive that origin ancestor, we are going to look at another program called RaxML. And so RaxML uses maximum likelihood estimation, which is a statistical estimation, to try and figure out the best way to orient all these aligned sequences so that we can find out which one came from which. And then from there, we can derive back using statistical methods where that origin ancestors, what its specific sequence was.
That's super neat. I was just wondering, you mentioned earlier about how you started this as kind of a project for one of your classes and it was fairly new. Where were you getting the data from and what did the data look like before you started working with it?
All of the data for COVID-19, or at least most of it, and even when we started looking at it in February, there was quite a bit in this database, is in a database called GSAD. And basically GSAD was, before COVID-19, a global consortium of flu virus data. And then once COVID started to emerge, they're like, hey, we can store this data too. And so they have this just massive database now. When we started, it was only about 1,000 sequences. Now it's like millions to billions of sequences. Like I said, they add 100,000 sequences a day. And it has most of the global data, although it is disproportionately represented. And so there's a lot from the US, there's a lot from Europe, primarily the UK. There's not a lot from Asia, there's not a lot from Africa, which is kind of a problem in general in bioinformatics. We very disproportionately represent populations, something we're trying to fix. There's a few consortiums trying to work on that, but sequencing data, like obtaining the data, is expensive. So it tends to be situated in the United States and also in Europe. And then a lot of those early sequences did come from China, although they aren't sequencing a ton anymore. Oddly enough, Canada has done a really bad job of contributing to this database. Part of it because I think in Alberta, we're like just not sequencing all that much, although I don't know if that's completely correct. I know that in BC, they've just stopped contributing sequences. They just gave up on it. And then also the Canadian, a couple of groups have just started to make our own Canadian database. So, but most of it was from GSAD, and it comes as like a big, huge string of characters. And so you just get this string of A, C, T's and G's, and you can download it. Some have like metadata associated with them. So you can look at like the age of the patient. Did they survive or did they die? Were they hospitalized? So some people have done analyses that way. We specifically just downloaded the sequences.
You mentioned that the files, it just contains some A's, T's, C's, and G's. Do you mind just explaining to us what an A, T, C, and G is?
Yeah. So A, T, C's, and G's stand for adenine, cytosine, thymine, and guanine, which are the four nucleic acids of the genetic code. So our entire body, we can think of it as like the instruction manual of any living organism, is encoded again in DNA. So we create our genes, and DNA is made up of adenine, cytosine, thymine, and guanine, which we abbreviate to A, T, C, and G because it's a lot easier to work with a string of A, C, T, and G's as to a whole bunch of little words. And so any genetic information that we get, whether it be viral or human-based or bacterial, it all comes kind of in this sequence of adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine, but they are encoded in A, C, T's, and G's as one giant string. And they also all come in a file format called FASTA. And so basically what it does is you can download a whole bunch of these sequences at once, because we have a little arrow that says the name of the organism, and then you have an enter line, and it will put then the sequence of that organism, and then you do the next one, and it'll just go on and on and on until you get to the end of your list. And there's a lot of built-in packages that will read these and be like, here's organism A, here's its sequences. And then we can use that BLAST and MAFT algorithms that I talked about before to align them and do the data manipulation.
That's really neat. So when you do your data manipulation, is it visual or like numerical? How exactly is it kind of, I guess, the end form represented?
Yeah, I think a little bit of all. We do a lot visually because it is nice for papers. So all of those, like what I've described as a tree, actually we illustrate in like what is a tree or what we call a tree. So it's like a whole bunch of branching patterns. If you imagine a tree with no leaves, and there's like a little trunk and roots coming out of it, and then there's a branch and those branches coming out of it, we can visualize that. We can also visualize how long each of these branches are. So some will be shorter because their origin will be less far away from where they are now in terms of evolutionary time. So that kind of shows us how one organism has evolved from another organism. We can also look at machine learning, because there's quite a bit of machine learning built into some stuff. They'll visualize it using what's called T-SNE maps or UMAP. And basically it kind of shows how related different things are to each other. This is often done not in genetic sequencing, but we can also sequence what's called the transcriptome. So when we look at genetics, we go from our DNA to another molecule called RNA. RNA is like if we were to take a dictionary of instructions for humans and were to translate it into another language, there's our RNA. And then the RNA carries it across the world, and it takes it to little robotic machinery that creates it into protein, and protein is what we use in our body. And so we can also sequence this RNA, and that tells us if our instruction manual is being used in a certain area. So a lot of people will use machine learning for those purposes, as it will allow us to show like what different cells in the body are similar to each other. And so we can visualize those with like little dots on a piece of paper. And then in terms of like mathematically, when we did the COVID study, we did this process again, like simulating a cell in a body. So we would calculate binding energy and we would see if that changes. So we'd represent that in tables and like compare it statistically. Other kind of statistical measures, we can take all of these UMAPs and visual things, and we can actually like statistically say, okay, yeah, they visually look like they group together, but do they statistically group together? And that gives us like, make sure that we don't have any false positives in our data set, because we oftentimes, these are done in cancer data sets, we really want to make sure that cells look like each other.
Yeah, that's really neat. I guess my next question, I know Chris mentioned earlier, he was asking kind of about specific codes or algorithms that you've been using. Are there any just kind of broad computer science topics that you really focused on in bioinformatics?
Yeah, there's a lot of underappreciated topics of computer science that happen in bioinformatics. Fundamentally, bioinformatics is based on computer science, but since the field is so young, like people either come in it from biology or come in it from computer science. It's kind of this weird field that way, where like we are like the first people who have a bioinformatics degree. And so definitely algorithms are super, super important because like we're dealing with such huge amounts of data, except for we never really take a course on how to be efficient. So it's kind of like you figure these things out as you go. Definitely algorithms are super, super important. We, in terms of like, do you want me to get into like coding languages we mostly use? That kind of in the field topics too?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Okay. So most of our work is done in Python, and as well as another language called R. So R is a statistical language that is basically can do any stats programs for us. So we'll run most of our programs in Python, and then we'll go into R and we'll compute statistics. We'll do a lot of like that visual stuff that I was showing, and R also does a lot of machine learning for us. Same with Python, we'll use a lot of those machine learning packages. And I guess kind of as another aspect of computer science that is kind of computer science, but kind of mathematics, we also use linear algebra a lot, because a lot of our data is represented in matrices. And so we manipulate those matrices. And so knowing how to like multiply matrices and change the matrices is really, really important. And also knowing the coding ways, like how to program our computer so that I can manipulate those matrices and look at them properly.
Super cool. What was, I guess, the most surprising discovery you made through your research, or maybe something that you just really enjoyed about it?
So I want to kind of, it's kind of like most surprising discovery kind of about me personally, is kind of how I kind of want to explain it. So when I first went into the health science stream and went into bioinformatics, I was full well thinking I was going to be a doctor. like everybody else in the program, I was like, I'm going to go into this. This is just a stepping stone. I'm going to be a physician. And so I got into the bioinformatics stream, like kind of by accident. I knew I liked math and I was like, okay. And I'd never done any programming before in my life. So that was kind of different. I was like, oh, I guess I can learn this programming thing. But like, it was really the math aspect of it. And also the bioinformatics stream of the health science program was the only one that didn't have to take English. So like that was also like part of the role in there. So I got into the program and when I started, there was 11 first years, most of which wanted to go to med school, just kind of how the Bachelor of Health Science program is. And so then most of them took their first year of computer science and really sadly didn't like it and switched out of the stream. And I was like, at the time, I didn't really think about it, but like now when I reflect back on it, it makes me quite sad because I really, really love the field now. And I think a common topic in computer science is like that first year is really hard. Like it's a huge learning curve and you just kind of have to like get over the hill and you're like, okay, I've got this now. Like, let's do fun stuff. And so I made it past that first year, got into second year and started. And then when I was in third year and working on this project, I was like starting to be like, wow, this is really cool. No longer was I starting to think like, oh, like, med school is the only route for me. I started being more engaged in the world of bioinformatics and how I can use my computer to make new discoveries and just like really learn like how biology works. And like, you really are core to every scientist now because everybody needs a programmer who can look at their data for them. And so then I started working on this project and the professor I was working on the project with started mentoring me and he started being explaining, you know, this is how you can go to graduate school with this. Like, these are all of the options you can do as a bioinformatician. And I started diving into the COVID-19 data and I was super intrigued and started to really, really enjoy it. And so I kind of switched my whole mindset and was starting to think, oh, okay, maybe med school is not my route. Maybe like I want to do this long-term. And so I've now applied to a master's program to continue to do bioinformatics stuff, analyzing viruses in general. And so really that project changed kind of my whole belief of like where I wanted to go in the future.
That's awesome that you found something that you're super passionate about because I know for some people that takes a really long time. So you're lucky that first try, you got it.
From my understanding, you've mentioned that you've wanted to, you know, maybe go into teaching one day in the doctorate level. So like at a university level, what really draws you to want to share your knowledge with others?
I think it is kind of like, again, this mentor that I've had that I just talked about. He kind of showed me the path and like, I really want to provide that for somebody else. I love sharing knowledge and I love learning knowledge. And I feel kind of staying like in the professorship route, I'll like keep on being able to become a lifelong learner and continue to do the research that I like, but also be able to pass that knowledge on to the next generation and kind of share this really, really cool field that I've discovered. Just to kind of provide examples for that, I've started going back to my old high school and I've done it twice now because most students in high school, first of all, they don't even really know what computer science is. Like nobody describes even what computer science is. And then to go to the next step and describe what bioinformatics is, like it's not even a thought crossing. So I have showed them what the field is. I've talked a little bit about my research and this most recent year we did a little tutorial. So they got to analyze their own COVID-19 sequences. I kept it really, really relevant. And those trees we were talking about earlier, I showed them the algorithms to align all these sequences together. I gave them all the sequences, of course. And then I showed them how they could build their tree and they got to visualize their tree. And it was really cool to see kind of that excitement in their eyes and like, oh, wow. And just kind of what I'd experienced kind of second, third year being like experiencing the field. And I really want to provide that to other people.
That's so nice to hear. Like, yeah, for sure. As you mentioned, there's only 11 people in your health sciences program. And, you know, most of them kind of dismissed the field because they didn't like the computer science aspect of it. So it's definitely cool to hear that. And do you think you'd be teaching or want to be teaching, I'd say, more of the coding classes or more of the biology classes or a combination of the two?
I think if I had to choose between coding and biology, I would go more coding, specifically because I've one of the things we have to do in our degree is something called wet lab, where you get in there and like you do like the stuff on petri dishes and kind of experiment with that. And I'm a bit like the squirrel from Up inside, so the dog from Up in these wet labs, where I'll be going away and then I'll just be like, squirrel, and the next thing I'll know, my experiment is kaput. So definitely not that side, but I would like to teach kind of bioinformatics, like a little bit of biology, a little bit of the computer science, and like the specific algorithms to bioinformatics. What is the genetic code? What is the history? Kind of all those things that I've acquired in the pure bioinformatics courses. But if I had to choose between computer science and biology, definitely the computer science side.
We know you graduated with honors, and I believe you have to do a thesis, right? If you're an honors student?
Yes.
So was this COVID project part of your thesis, or was it something different?
No, so my thesis kind of built from this COVID project, but my thesis was quite completely different. I had found a thesis supervisor, and then I did this COVID project, and the person who supervised my COVID project was like, hey, I want to continue supervising you. So we collaborated, and I worked with both the thesis supervisor and the person who supervised my COVID project. And basically what we were looking at was rates of evolution. And so you're getting into some like super, super theoretical population genetics. And so when we look at the rate of evolution, it's the rate at which a population changes over time. Whereas there's another thing called the rate of mutation, which is the rate at which like our genetic material, our instructions change over time. And that happens, the rate of mutation happens with one individual, and the rate of evolution happens within a population of groups. And so one of the big things that has come out is that there was, back in 1967, a very famous population geneticist named Kimura equated the rate of evolution to the rate of mutation. And since then, basically all of our bioinformatics software have been built off of this equating of the rate of evolution to the rate of mutation. And my thesis supervisor has shown multiple times that this the equating these two things is not always correct. And so basically, especially among viruses, so I kept kind of on that virus track, specifically with HIV, because it's the fastest mutating biological entity besides these things called viroids on the world. So like, it's really, really important. Like it mutates so fast that it doesn't follow this trend anymore. So basically what I was doing was first looking at the rate of mutation, both in COVID-19, because we wanted to see if it had the same problem, as well as inside HIV, because we already knew it had the problem. And then I created a software tool using Python, which simulated long time scales, so like thousands, like I think our largest was like 150,000 generations of an organism going, like reproducing, creating those trees we were talking about before. And then because it followed one of these trees we were talking about before, I could then throw it back into that software, going back to RaxML, which recreates the trees, and basically proving that when our mutation rates are really, really high, these trees don't work. And so that's what my thesis was. We sort of did that. We haven't published it yet because we're still working on modifying the software a little bit. But yeah, it kind of reproved what he'd been talking about all along, except for at a specific software example.
With viruses and COVID-19 and kind of, I guess, the future of medicine, where do you see bioinformatics heading? Like which topics, which areas of research do you think are going to be big, kind of up and coming in the next 10 to 15 years?
I think the biggest one, and what's really cool, is precision medicine. So precision medicine is, we take your genome, we sequence you, we sequence your instruction manual, and we say, hey, you have XYZ chance of getting this cancer, you should do XYZ in order to prevent getting said cancer. And we already can do that a little bit. Like there's this gene called BRCA1 and BRCA2, and we know they cause breast cancer. So if somebody's family has breast cancer, they'll often sequence the breast cancer. And if there's a mutation in BRCA1 or BRCA2, they'll sequence every single family member. And you might get like a mastectomy early because there's a chance of you developing it just because you have that mutation. So that's kind of already developing. But this would be more like, we sequence your whole genome and you have, we know exactly which cancer mutations you have. Let's prevent that cancer. It can also go to the point we're starting to evolve into like personalized nutrition. So we sequence your genome and based off of that, we can tell you like exactly which foods you should eat to keep yourself the healthiest based off of your genome, which is kind of cool. And then also the big thing, and it's a really, really big push, is rare genetic diseases. So as of now, rare genetic diseases, most, if they can't figure it out just based off of like symptoms and that kind of stuff, they will sequence genomes quite often. Sometimes it's just in a research-based environment, but clinical geneticists do it quite often. And it's trying to figure out what causes that genetic disease, because if we can find what causes it, we're more likely to be able to find the best medications to treat it. Oftentimes we can't cure it, but we can maybe prevent some downstream effects. And so that's one of the really big things. The problem is we're still not great at identifying rare genetic diseases just based off of sequencing genomes alone. That's kind of the big advancement that needs to happen really on the bioinformatics part. How can we create algorithms that can identify these things? And then I guess in the world of viruses, COVID-19 has really made it a world of viruses. So a lot of the researchers who did viral analyses before have a lot more funding now. And so I think we're going to be able to go and look at a lot of things that we couldn't before.
Super interesting. Yeah. It's kind of crazy to think that in the future, they'll basically be able to prevent or predict everything before it even happens.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see where we go ethically for that too, because there's a lot of ethics that needs to be discussed before we can do that justifiably.
Yes, very true. So we've talked about a lot today, from your COVID research to a bit about what bioinformatics is in general. So I guess just as a takeaway for the audience, what is one thing you want people to know or remember about what you do as a scientist who studies bioinformatics?
I think I want to say that like bioinformatics is everywhere, and it is this huge evolving field that like there's going to be so many jobs in the future. Once we get more into this era of precision medicine, I can just see the field of bioinformatics blooming. And I think the thing is, like, if this interested you today, like, take the step. Like I said, there's lots of people who are in the field of bioinformatics now who like never thought they would be there before. So for example, the professor who mentored me, his undergraduate degree was in astronomy. Like if you're a computer science and you just heard what a scientist and you just heard what I was talking about, like there's lots of master's programs in bioinformatics that'll take you from many different streams, anything from engineering, mathematics. Apparently there's a few astronomers out there, or just general biology. Like it is a field that is going to evolve. There is going to be jobs in. So come join us.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Erin, for coming on the show today. It was a pleasure getting to know you more and to hear about what you do.
Thank you guys so much.
Hey, listeners. Thanks for joining us for this great conversation. A big thank you once again to Erin for joining us and explaining her research. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at @U_CPSC for the latest UCalgary computer science events and updates. And follow this podcast wherever you may be listening. We hope you join us again in the new year for season 3 of What the Tech. Bye!